Say something, goddammit. You're on television. You're live to the whole world.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today is...
Luke.
And...
Ralph. Every time.
We didn't go over this last
time. Every time.
This is episode 102, and today's episode, we're going to be focusing on the streaming service known as Prime Video, and two movies directly from that production company, you know, they make their own movies now. And Luke chose these movies, and those movies are Blow the Man Down and The Report. I know The Report for sure came out last year. Blow the Man Down, is that this year or last year also, Luke?
Hold on, I think, weren't they both this year?
I think they are both
this year. The Report came out late last year. I remember because it was they were trying to get it at consideration for like something. Hmm. Everyone talked about it when Adam Driver, because it was Adam Driver's last year, you know? He made a lot of movies.
Oh, yeah, no, it came out late last year, yeah, like November 29th, 2019.
Yep. Yeah. And then as part of our ongoing Sight and Sound Marathon, the Best of the Movies Decade List stuff, we're going to be doing Apocalypse Now from 1979, which is also Luke's choice in that, Luke's pick in that marathon. And that's what we're going to be covering today. You can always find us, this show, at our website, otherpodcast.com, and obviously iTunes and all that shit. And on there, you have other previous marathons that we've done on there, including like... The what did we do? The twin films we did last year. We've done a fucking a classics marathon, an animation marathon. We've done, man, a bunch of stuff on there. We did that weird one with cityscapes and towns things.
Where we did like suburban, yeah.
Town life versus city life kind of movies. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was great. It's good stuff. We had two David Lynch movies on there. I remember.
My name is David Lynch.
Anyway, check that out, otherpodcast.com. You can also send feedback at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Now, Luke, what have you been up to? How's your current ongoing situation of vacation doing?
Still going strong. Still not doing much, just vacationing, watching some movies and things of that nature.
That I can see here. Anything specific you want to report? Anything new?
That I watched?
Sure. No, not recent discoveries yet, but like anything in general.
Not necessarily.
Just a bored individual, aren't you?
No, I'm keeping myself occupied with little projects.
Oh yeah, like what? If you want to say.
Built a network file server.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. Right.
little things.
All right. Okay, cool. Ralph, anything for you to report?
Yes, I made meat popsicle.
That's not what I asked.
Oh, okay. No, nothing. Sorry, I know. Just had to. No, nothing really. Let me think. Kid is, I don't know. Everything's pretty much the same, you know. The days aren't blending in. I know a lot of people are having this problem. I'm listening to it about people complain online and other shows I listen to about... just like everything blends, like every week is like the last week and it doesn't feel like it's been 6 weeks or 8 weeks at this point or whatever, how long it's been.
Depends what they're doing with themselves, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, but I know a lot of people are complaining. Yeah. And then on my end, I'm just like, yeah, I work 1 week and I don't do shit for that week except for, I don't know, video game and, you know, my regular life and bum it and enjoy my being a bum. And then, and then on the weeks I do have to work, the week I do have to work, I just go to work and do what I got to do. So,
yeah,
not a big deal. I don't know. I just try to take it, you know, enjoy some time. But at the same time, I feel like the morning drags. The middle afternoon is super fast, and then like around now, takes a sweet time till about like 10 or 11, and then around like 10 to midnight or 2 a.m. usually flies by.
Well, because we're playing games.
Sometimes, yeah, but like today I won't be, for example. But
yeah. Want to bet?
Well, not that late anyway.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me rephrase that.
Yeah, I know you both play a lot of, is it Call of Duty, right?
The duties. Yeah. Yeah, besides that, I've been trying to start new games, but, you know, it's that getting into the game, mm-hmm. that's just like hinders. It's like getting into a show or getting into a movie.
Yeah, and also some games, you know, it's, oh shit, that's going to be a long one. I got
to
really
like... Well, yeah, the game I'm trying to get into is like, I know it's 50 plus, so 50 plus what hours. One of the Final Fantasy games.
Is the new remake one?
No.
Oh, okay. I was just asking. Okay. Speaking of games, that's what I've been into lately, the new game stuff. I just started Mario Odyssey, which is amazing. I mean, I love this stuff. They're so creative with the gameplay. It encourages a lot of joystick maneuvering to play with it. And I'm on the first chapter still. I just started yesterday. It's hella fun. I got your son, Leo, Roth, into it a little bit when he came down. He's like, oh, Mario Odyssey, fuck yeah, basically, and went on it. Another one is I started Ni No Kuni, which I got on a massive sale they had on the Switch. Never played it. I was curious about it when it came out on the PS3, I think. But they remastered it or whatever to Switch. And I've been playing that more because I started that one 5 days ago or so. And that's a lot of fun. It looks like it's a tome. I don't know if it's as big as I imagine it is, but there's a lot of stuff in it to cover, a lot of things to remember, familiars, attack patterns, magic, and all that. It's a lot of fun. And I'm a big Studio Ghibli fan, so the art style and all that is totally complementary to my style and my love for it, so I'm already digging that. So I started those two, but I've been neglecting a lot of PS4 games because I'm on the Switch mainly. But in general there, I'm still doing a little bit here and there of I'm in the nightmare mode for the first time on Resident Evil 3 and stuff like that, but I haven't gone on it in a few days. Yeah, but that's basically what I've been doing, and that and editing for that project that I already spoke about. I won't get into it because I haven't done much since then. I also started work since the quarantine started. I'm back into work this week, and it's very slow and annoying with the face mask on all the time, obviously. But otherwise, it's fine. You know, it's just a slow version of work and people coming in. Not long lines or anything because luckily I don't work at a drive-thru. If I were, it would be busy constantly. It would be long lines everywhere full of cars. But I guess I'm lucky right now. In that it is not very busy, but also not very lucky because that means business is bad. So, you know, whatever there. But it's great. I can get my lattes again that I've been wanting, the stuff I can make.
Yeah, yes, right.
Jesus Christ, I've been missing my own shit, my own concoctions. I make iced coffee for myself for the morning after, and now I have like 3 in there. So thank God for that. It's great. Have caffeine again. But yeah, that's essentially it. Nothing insane to report. Just work is back on a limited basis, and I'm having fun with it. So let's carry on here for recent discoveries. So Luke, you're going to start us off. You have the most movies.
Yes.
Oh, fuck me. Oh, I just remembered. You put Extraction on there. I also saw that. I'm going to put it on mine too. So I saw as many as you did.
Oh, so, man. There goes my pick for next time.
Right?
Well, oh, yeah, really? You can pick it so if you want.
No, that's lame.
Anyway, so when you get to Extraction, Luke, I'll talk about it with you. So, but you can start with whatever.
All right, let's go with the meat and potatoes of this one. The Lighthouse.
Oh, man.
I finally saw it.
I have no idea what you think of this movie.
Oh, man. Well, I didn't know what to expect out of this one. I was just like, I just heard about it, you know, and I was like, let's go see it. 99-cent rental. Let's do it. It's a heavy fucking movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think you're like, ooh, that's a movie man's movie.
Yeah, it is. It's a cinephile movie.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's some amazing acting with William Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, it's Willem, actually.
Uh-huh. William Dafoe or Willem Dafoe?
Shut up. Every time.
I know.
Every time. He won the Independent Spirit Award for Best Actor, I think, for that movie.
Yeah, but that's not an award that matters.
I guess not.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, like, how far this movie goes and, you know, to the point where they're drinking, like, homemade hooch just to get the day through.
Yeah, it looks like a horrible thing.
It is. Yeah, it's a shit situation.
Island. The island's no bigger than an acre, you know, it just sucks. Just sucks.
It's quite depressing, but hey, kudos to those two.
So, did you like it? I can't...
what's going on in that back?
Man.
Yeah, what is going on?
Some stupid dog.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a weird movie. It's like, I liked it in terms of like the acting, because it was really powerful, and the way it was shot. But it's not something I would want to watch, like, you know, once a year or something, because it's a heavy movie to watch.
Well, Buff and I had trouble, like, figuring out what the fuck was going on during the review. I remember we had trouble, and I ultimately came down on, like, not really the biggest fan for it because I just didn't get it. I just did not understand it the way people have been.
Right.
And it's ultimately not for us, even though it's a beautiful movie, even though it's great acting and all that. And but, yeah.
All right. Hey, glad I saw it. Got that off the bucket list.
Well, as long as you're glad you saw it. What's the next one?
That was the bucket list.
This is the one I've been wanting to see for a really long time.
Okay.
Guns Akimbo.
Right. Akimbo.
It's a Daniel Radcliffe movie where he has two guns bolted into his hands. And he's in this, like, really? Yes. So it's not by choice.
I know nothing of this movie.
Yeah, so he's pretty much just like a regular, like, computer tech guy. Works for, I think it's like some video game company. And one day he's just getting drunk and watching this show where they literally make people kill each other on it, you know. And whoever survives, I guess, will have like their record cleaned because they all have criminal records.
Criminal records?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And he starts just getting drunk and trolling them, like, you know, talking shit to everyone. And then the admins get him and they're like, hey, stop being a dick. So he starts being a dick to the admins. Next thing you know, next day they find out where he lives and they bolt these guns to his hands and they put him in the game.
So that's what they do with the other contestants too? They bolt hands?
No, it was pretty much just him. Other people are there for their own reasons, but he's kind of forced into it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So it has like a Death Race appeal. Remember Death Race? I was a bunch of prisoners fighting for first place, and the one in first place gets to be free.
I know of the movie. I never saw it though.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Well, never mind.
So he's pretty much got 24 hours to kill like the top person in the game. And, you know, and everyone's watching him, you know, like on the internet and stuff like that. So,
of course, yeah. Oh, you know, that kind of sounds like a wackadoodle fun. How's his style like?
He has a limit, so he has the guns go all the way up, like the magazine goes all the way up his arms. So he only has like X amount of ammo in each arm, and he's got like a little counter on each arm. So
that's so weird.
Yeah. So once he's out of ammo, he's out.
Yeah, yeah, that you should.
Well, you could beat people with ammo.
It's a.
I guess.
It's a fun movie, though. It's a fun action movie.
You know what it sounds like? Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The energy of it sounds like it could be like the one from that Kick-Ass movie. Is it like that?
I got more of a shoot-em-up vibe.
Shoot-em-up vibe. Okay. The Clive Owen bad B-movie with Paul Giamatti. Okay. You know what makes me think of also Crank? Is it like Crank?
Oh, God, I haven't seen that one in such a long time, so I don't remember.
That's a wackadoodle movie.
Yeah, the one where he has to like have an adrenaline rush all the time or he dies or something.
Yeah, yeah. And he fucks his girlfriend in public just to get the adrenaline rush. Such a weird movie. Okay, cool. Just asking, just wondering, because now I'm kind of curious. I didn't know what it was about. I just knew it had Daniel
Radcliffe. It's a fun action movie. Doesn't take itself too seriously. It's got some laughs in it. It's on my iTunes account, so feel free to binge.
Okay, cool. Then I might.
All right.
You bought it.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Dude, I bought it a long time ago. It finally came out. Because before you could only rent it for X amount of time before buying it. Hmm. Right. Okay. So the next one I saw was a documentary called Beastie Boys Story, which is on Apple TV Plus.
I heard about it.
It's pretty much... what is his, Mike D and Adam Horowitz. It's kind of like they're on stage. And they're in front of like a audience, like at a theater, and they're just kind of going over the whole story of the Beastie Boys from like early childhood to when they all met up and like how they pretty much all the three of them just like lived and worked with each other for like nonstop throughout the entire time that they were a band.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. I would say it's for people who like the Beastie Boys and kind of want to know more about them. And it's it's just them talking on stage. They do have a lot of like clips from MTV, their music videos, a lot of pictures that things like that.
Okay.
And it's
so it's not like one concert doc. It was a document. It's like an overall documentary.
Yes.
Got it.
And it's directed by Spike Jonze.
Oh, you're kidding! Oh shit!
Yeah, they have.
Nice. He's done a few.
Yeah, I guess they had a relationship with Spike Jonze for quite some time.
Yeah, there's always a few. It's like Scorsese and the Rolling Stones or like, what's that guy? Paul Thomas Anderson and that one guy. Remember he did that short with, what's that band, Raph? You and I saw it, didn't we?
Which movie?
that musical he did, that 30-minute musical with that. Is it?
Oh,
fuck me. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Can't remember, but I do.
That famous band, it's gone. But anyway, it's like that. It's one of those direct relationships with bands. That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I might check it out now on Apple TV.
Yep.
Cool. I still haven't seen a lick of Apple TV yet. I keep forgetting that it exists.
Right.
Until they charge you.
I'm going to choose that next time for myself. So.
Charge you.
All right.
Next is a Netflix original that I saw, not by choice. It's called The Half of It. It's
why not by choice?
I was at a friend's house and they chose to watch that one.
Break in quarantine, I see.
Yeah, was it with Rob?
No,
not me.
Anyway,
I would have had it on my list.
And then I feel bad. I don't put movies in there that I find awful.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do. I guess. Yeah.
Anyway, it's
you want to rag. Movie, that's why.
It's a Netflix original called The Half of It. It's like a rom-com kind of thing, but it falls flat on that aspect. It's about this girl, Ellie. She writes essays for everyone in like her school, pretty much, and as a way to make money. And then one day this jock comes up to her and is like, hey, can you write love letters or a letter for, you know, this girl I have a crush on? And as she's writing these love letters to this girl, she develops having feelings for her as well. And she also ends up befriending the jock. So kind of like a coming out movie. So
where's Adam Sandler?
He's not in this Netflix one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't like it or are you hiding?
It was something I'll never have to see again, hopefully.
You never know.
Shut up, Ralph.
You never know. That's
all right. And then the next day, I went back to the same place, and we watched Extraction, a man's movie.
Definitely closer to the
yes,
that,
yes.
This is the one we both saw.
Yes, it is. It's a pretty fun action movie. Did you notice like the camera on it?
The camera?
Like
you can't see the camera.
Like how the camera moved with them. During some of those actions, like where the fucking camera guy like literally jumped from one roof to the other with them, and things like that, or like being in like the fights with them, very shaky. That's like the one part that I like about the movie.
Yeah, it has a kind of a Paul Greengrass Bourne Identity feel to it, except just a little differently. It's like an attached camera shoulder thing, and that long shot is spectacular,
dude. I know, and I'm like. Where's the break?
It starts off like on the ground level. It goes up to a roof,
yes.
And then it jumps off the roof, and it goes into a car chase. It is
dude,
amazing.
I know. Well,
it's amazing,
especially Chris Hemsworth. He's the main guy in the movie. He throws the kid, then he throws himself to the next roof, and I'm like, "Where's the cut?" And you see the camera jumps with him, and I'm like, "What the fuck?" Yeah, that was nuts.
And he falls off the balcony with that guy. He's fighting them like to the death, and but you could tell where they take breaks, you know, because Chris Hemsworth takes a break from fighting when they follow the kid for a bit,
right?
When he's being chased, and then you see Chris Hemsworth comes like through a door.
I'm just imagining Chris Hemsworth having like that one cut of the dead moment.
yeah. It must have been insane to shoot.
Dude, it had to be.
Because some of those had to be choreographed perfectly with the passengers that were passing by, the walking and the driving. They had to time all that shit. That must have been.
I mean, there are a couple places I'm like, they probably could have made a cut here, but I'm not sure.
It's possible. You're right. I shouldn't say that it was that. But I think.
But they made it seem so flawless.
Yes, everything I hear about the shot though on Twitter, because it was that week it came out, a lot of people talked about it. It seems like it was all
shit.
A shot. So
I'm impressed.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have an action stunt choreographer direct a movie, because that's what happened. This guy,
Sam Hargrave.
Yeah, he's a famous or semi-famous or whatever, proficient stunt coordinator, action.
Oh,
guy,
okay.
Second AD guy. So the fact that he directed this movie kind of makes sense. He was ambitious as fuck.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, the story itself though it was okay. It was just like a normal thing, and
kid gets kidnapped. You know, all right.
Some war-torn gang-filled, country he has to invade, and he has to save this kid, and he falls for the kid. Well, not falls for, like, he has feelings for his safety, and blah 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 blah. And he starts off hard-ass, and it's very paint by numbers, but the action's so worth it.
It definitely is.
Yeah. But that's all I would say. I mean, Chris Hemsworth is, I mean, he's solid in the movie. He's like, one thing I guess I missed from it is that Chris Hemsworth has, on top of being like a big action, not action though, but he has a lot of action too. He's a big star. And a lot of that big starness comes from his charisma. And I feel like his charisma is nowhere near this movie.
What do you mean?
He has no charm in this movie, you know?
Oh, yeah, he's kind of a very bland character, I think.
Yeah.
When they only tried to show, like, his, like, I think, what, daughter, to kind of give him some, like, backstory, or...
Yeah. Yeah, and I felt like, I don't know, they took that away, and I'm like, why hire Chris Hemsworth if you're not going to fucking show that? That's his specialty. But, because even, like, in the lady version of Ghostbusters, like, he was, like... He had too much charm, but he had it, you know, and or other movies, you know, like Thor, he brings it in, you know, here and there. But I don't know. I felt like that was missing. And other than that, though, the movie was pretty cool.
All right.
So that's all you have. And then we're on to Roth now, and you have two movies.
Oh, but... shit. It's me? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wake up.
Yeah, I know. I was totally falling asleep. No, I wasn't. One of my movies that I saw was Underwater. What's it called? Movie by William Eubank, starring Kristen Stewart, Vincent Cassel, a bunch of other people, like that one guy from that one show, TJ Miller. There it is.
Yeah.
So this was it was actually a cool movie.
We liked it. Good.
Yeah. I did like it. I did like it. I can see what you were talking about with the whole alien thing going on, the Ripley thing. Yeah, so that was interesting. I say she did a good job. I mean, if that's what they're trying to portray, and I like how it's the threat is like something. It feels sci-fi, but it's in our own Earth, so it's really weird.
Yeah, it's like the Abyss, but the Abyss goes way farther with the sci-fi, but like because they uncover something super like portal-driven alien being or whatever. But this is kind of like that, but not really. It's almost like a half monster movie, half, right? It's almost like
It's weird because you don't expect it to be, but it is. But then it's
just really a survival movie.
You're right, exactly. Yeah, I like it overall, and I like how the movie is. Does a good job of like it gives you the quick description in the beginning, so you like this is what you're getting into. Just letting you know, and then boom, the movie kind of starts off, and you don't ever have to worry about like, oh well, this was made this. Like, no, nobody gives a fuck. Like, let's just get in. You know, they're in their world. We don't have to deal with it. Overall, I had fun with it. I know I actually really appreciated the movie. Yeah, so it was fun. Fun movie to watch overall.
Awesome. And you have a doc.
I do.
We all have documentaries. Nice.
Mine is just called Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Rodman?
How about a man who loves Rod?
But it's an ESPN 30 for 30, technically. See, that's the problem. See, it's not coming up under the thing. It's about Dennis Rodman. It's about Dennis Rodman and his basically his life, how he started, and it's kind of a fucking crazy world, crazy life he had, because he gets into like his past, how he never had a father really, or he did, but it just he left, and it gets into this whole craziness of like how this guy was probably the biggest introvert, shyest kid ever, and he didn't really start playing basketball until college. Which is really weird because, like, how do you skip out on high school basketball, which is, you know, usually how you get into college.
A lot of people come from there.
It's a super weird and interesting story, and you watch it, and it's kind of like a fucked up thing where he lived on the streets for a while and a bunch of other craziness, and he's just kind of like a guy who was always looking for, like, acceptance in the world from somebody and stuff like that, so... And then when he finally gets it, he obviously clings to it and, you know, and things of that nature. And he doesn't know how to deal with things. And he's like a little big kid because he's now all of a sudden 28 and winning a basketball championship with the Detroit Pistons. And then you're like, oh, and you're still like a little kid and you never thought like, you know, you see your coach as like a father figure, and it's just super weird. Like he never grew mentally, you know, emotionally and stuff like that. And it's in those aspects, everyone's like, well, you should already know this shit. Like, and he didn't. He never had the same things that everybody else did, you know. So it's really interesting. And then when you watch, obviously, like him getting into why he did, basically how he gets out there, he just kind of like, I'm going to go with everything, with whatever I want to do. And then, you know, his life from the Bulls and things of that nature. And then the Kim Jong-un stuff and Jesus, you know, getting into all that nature and basically like just becoming this, like, it's kind of like just going into his mindset. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool and sad to watch at the same time. It's sad to know that somebody who probably brought joy slash, you know, to a lot of fans in two cities for sure, at least Detroit and Chicago and stuff like that. And such a big public figure has all these, like, we all know that they all have their own life, you know, and their own issues. But like when you know the struggle of somebody like just that really fucked up kind of stuff going on, you're like, man, like, yeah, everybody failed them and no one really cared. As long as he did what he needed to do out there, they just all like, okay, that's on you, buddy. You know, it's kind of shitty. Yeah. It's a kind of shitty thing. Especially to hear it from like his friends and stuff like that, you know, or his family members who like care but don't care. But, you know, he's in like a really weird scenario. And obviously he made his own issues where like he has kids now and he doesn't see them and shit like that, you know, because he's like, well, I don't know how to be a dad, so I'm not going to be a dad. And I was like, well, sounds kind of like your dad, you know, and shit like that. So, but yeah, interesting documentary to watch overall. I think it was like a little bit over an hour and a half. It's on ESPN, ESPN 30 for 30, one of the 30 for 30s.
Yeah, was Ant Rodman interviewed for the documentary or no?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, he was. He's basically like the whole time they're just going to go through like, you know, his story and stuff like that. And as things come up, he gets asked questions and, you know, he answers everything truthfully, but he's wearing sunglasses the whole time through the documentary, like obviously hiding behind a lot of emotions. But yeah, he does go through the whole thing. Yeah. They do a lot of family people and a lot of obviously ex players and stuff like that, that he played with, coaches and things like that. Yeah. They did a really good job.
Okay. Awesome. So that's Rodman. On 30 for 30, so it's a CNN thing, right?
ESPN.
ESPN, sorry. Fuck.
Whatever. Same thing, right? CNN, ESPN. To me, get them confused all the time.
But you're right. They're not technically the same thing. It's my bad. All right. Now we're on to me here. I have a few here. I have four left. I had five, but extraction was done. One, I saw an old movie on Mubi, M-U-B-I, 1994's Amateur. An amnesiac wakes up on a New York alley. He meets Isabel, an ex-nun, now erotic writer, at a diner and follows her home. She helps him find his identity. Then there's Sophia, the porn star. That's what the fucking IMDb says. I don't know why it says it like that, but that's what happens, I guess. Made by Hal Hartley, who's done a few movies, kind of, you know, iconic movies to a lot of cinephiles in the 90s. I haven't seen much of his movies at all. This might be his first, so this is all new for me. And they were doing an Isabel Huppert marathon, who did the main star in Greta Ruff, if you remember that movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I was like Isabel Huppert. She's great. And I haven't seen enough of her movies, so I saw this one. Super weird movie. It feels kind of 90s. It's very strange turns of character phrases and stuff. You see a lot of actors starting in Amateur, like... I can't remember now the name of the person, but one of the stars in Sopranos, he's like a young punk bartender cover guy or something in this movie. It's kind of interesting to watch him so young. But yeah, this movie is kind of fun and weird and wacky because this guy is on the floor and he wakes up. He was supposed to have been killed by this porn star ex of his. Apparently, his whole life has been a horrible thing. You find out through conversation, right, through other people's conversations that, oh yeah, I killed him. I pushed him off the window. But what they don't know is that he's still alive, walking around being a nice guy because he doesn't remember who he was. But what he used to be was an asshole, a huge, horrible of a person. And how that comes back in this finale of the end of people killing each other and assassins going after him and money lost to mobsters. It's insane. It's an insane kind of movie. And it's almost plot heavy, but it also isn't. It doesn't seem to care about that. It's a weird movie. If you're interested in weird 90s movies, I guess Amateur could be one of those for you. But ultimately, though, I come down with, like, it's kind of like, if I'd seen it at the time, I would have enjoyed it way more had I not seen it. But I don't know. It feels like I'm not entirely sure what I feel about it. But it's an interesting movie, really weird. Interesting conversations for sure. I would say that. I don't think people hook up quite the way that this movie does it, but I also can't say that it never happened. So that's Amateur, which is nowhere to be found. You can rent it, I'm sure, somewhere, but I saw it on a streaming service that already has it gone. So that's Amateur. Let's see. What's the next one here? I saw a documentary.
Real quick. So yes. The Rodman one's called Rodman for Better or Worse. I say it only because there's another something coming out that's called Just Rodman.
Oh, so it's not the one that's Just Rodman. It's called Rodman what?
For Better or Worse.
Got it.
Sorry.
That's good. That's good. All right. I have a documentary here. I saw a movie called Missing 411. Anyone heard of it by any chance?
Negative.
Came out in 2016. There's a different one that I kind of wish I saw that one instead or also, but whatever. A documentary that chronicles the similar disappearances of five children in the wilds of North America across multiple decades. This movie is made by Michael DeGrazier and Benjamin Politis. It is made by the book written by David Politis, which I think is called Missing 401. He has a series of books. So I know a lot about this stuff. This is based on an old show I did two years ago on the SOS show, Supernatural Occurrence Studies, if you want to look it up. About the Missing 411. Super interesting stuff, guys. It's like a weird thing that's been happening in America for as long as there's been in America. And that's that weird disappearances happening in weird murders or deaths, suspicious deaths that happen in exclusively nature areas. A lot of places, almost exclusively in, what do you call those places? National parks. From Yosemite to the big ones, right, to the small ones that every state has. Every single state has several. And they almost all have cases. And they talk about how this guy, David Politis, wrote a series of books that he's like an investigative guy. And he just found this through his wares. And he quit his job and he started working on this only. And he discovered that there is thousands of cases of people missing without any explanation. These aren't people that were missing because of some human contact, like murder, like someone kidnapped them and murdered them. He excludes those. He excludes the ones that are attacked by bears or attacked by anything like that, or nature, or like the rain killing someone, or like a snowstorm killing someone. Excluding all those, there's so many other unexplained phenomena. For example, one of the cases would be, and I don't remember the names or anything, but I remember one of the cases was a toddler. A lot of these victims are kids, by the way. A toddler would be with his family, and then, you know, they're in the woods, right? They're camping or whatever. And then one of these toddlers, you know, runs off, you know, just out of the line of sight for a moment. And then when the parents go like, oh, he's over there, and they go over there to look for him, he's instantly gone. And they don't see him for days, sometimes years. And it's just gone. Like in the blink of an eye, the kid disappears. And almost always when the kid comes back, not in the way you expect it, but he comes back, like they find his remains in a place that has an impossibility for a kid to join. Like impossible that a kid could climb that ravine, climb that trail, climb that whatever. And his clothes are always found neatly, or they're found like they weren't, like no evidence of a animal attacking them. And just like his shoes is found maybe, or his shoes are missing, but the clothes are there. Always very strange behaviors. Are seen later on, much later on, sometimes days or months or years. And it makes no sense. And sometimes the shoes will look as new as when the kid had it when he first disappeared. Super weird stuff that has no explanation. And there's like hundreds of these cases. And the movie, the documentary, kind of goes through five of these. And they're all kids in this case, and they're all in one specific general area. But it does a good job of blending in interviews with, including some news interviews that were happening during that time, and it also heads into some dramatization, I think, in the way so they can explain better, show you how, where the people were when it disappeared, when this person disappeared, and right. Where, like, how did the place look like, and so on. So, and I think it's good. I think it's a good one. Now, I think And the good thing about this movie, the good and bad thing, is that it's kind of dry. So, like, it just tells you the facts. And because of that, it feels a little dry. But so that's a good and a bad. But it doesn't sensationalize anything. It does go into, like, how people obviously suspected the parents, suspected the neighbors, suspected all these other people. Criminal investigations were open. Nothing came from it, of course. But everyone assumes, like, it wasn't some weird alien. It wasn't anything like that. It was there was a person who did this. No animal could have done this. No animal drags things like that. No one, right? So, like, everyone's just pointing fingers at everyone else.
This is kind of like that HBO show that's out right now, isn't it? Or The Outsider? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it is kind of like The Outsider. Yeah. It is. Yeah, that's very good. That's very good. It's exactly.
Mind like you, that. I haven't seen shit about The Outsider. I just seen that trailer like 300 times.
No, I've seen the whole first season. It's a great season. You should watch it. That one's very interesting because it mixes a very police procedural, but includes this alien thing in it, this alien beast that's supernaturally taking over. Like this alien takes the. Like morphs his body into someone that's real and then kills children. So when that person gets like we saw you have your fingerprints all over this and all this, and I'm like, how is that possible? I was over here in a different state during that time, you know? And that's where the interesting part comes in. It's very similar. So yeah, children would disappear and then die weird, or their bones are found after. You don't see like their bodies like that. You just see like a bone fragment. You see the jaw of the bone, or you see the maybe a full skeleton, but you don't know what happened. You know, it's very strange. And this is happening in real life in a lot of places. It's happening even today. We had cases that we talked about as early as, I think, 2017 when we did it. So, yeah, they're everywhere. And if anyone wants to check it out, it's called Missing 411. There's two documentaries, one made by the guy who wrote the book and this one, which was made by, I guess, his brother and focusing on five cases. But, yeah, it's super fascinating stuff. You're just reading it just factually. The guy just writes it factually. He doesn't embellish at all. He doesn't give theories or opinions on what's happening. He just writes exactly what happened and the circumstances of what happened. And it's super interesting.
So, okay.
So I got a movie here that I haven't seen ever. I just missed it. It's called Remember the Titans from 2000. Remember
how did you miss that?
Seriously. How did you miss 20 years ago?
20 years ago. Yeah, that's right. The true story of a newly appointed African-American coach and his high school team on their first season as a racially integrated unit, directed by Bose Yakin, maybe, written by Gregory Allen Howard. Denzel Washington stars as that coach, Will Patton, Wood Harris, a bunch of people. Also a bunch of people that became bigger after this because it's 20 years old. So I don't know how I missed it, guys. I knew it was a huge, it's a Disney movie. I saw it on the Disney Channel and I just missed it. I don't know. It's one of those, like, it's like The Help, or it's like one of those, like the Green Book, I guess, it has that similarity to it. I remember it was a big movie and
racial prejudice.
It's about that. a huge portion of the movie is about that. So it has a lot of that in it. But I thought it was just a football. I didn't know it was about this other thing entirely. I didn't know it was about race at all. or if I knew at the time in 2000, I forgot. And I just thought it was like a football movie. And even though I love Denzel Washington, I had no interest in watching a sports movie because, you know, they're all basically the same to me because, you know, it's all about the upcoming team and they suck in the beginning and then they win at the end, you know, whatever, you know. And I just didn't care for it at the time and I never saw it. But it's pretty good, guys. I liked it. 20 years late, but I liked the movie. It's a good movie. It's had some really uplifting humor stuff, as some good inspirational stuff. It's obviously some white people being fucking hating on them. They're just haters. Bunch of haters. Well,
they're called racists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, and they're all, you know, there's a little bit of a spectrum of different kind of racists, too. You know, there's the ones that start off racist, but also, like, overcome themselves to be different when they realize, like, oh, no, these are people and whatever. My favorite component of the movie isn't actually anything to do with Denzel Washington's character, although he's shouldering more because he's a coach, right? But it's the friendship that opens with the captain of the football team, which is the white guy, and I guess the one of the lead black kids who are in the team with him, I think, on the defensive side. I don't know the difference, but whatever. And they become actually really, really good friends throughout the course of the movie, so much so that, like, the kid is, like, has to break up with, or the girlfriend breaks up with him because he's having friend with, he's friends with a black guy, and his mom hates him for it. You know, like, it becomes like a thing. And their friendship just struck like the most natural in the movie, and I felt like it was kind of cool. It was kind of like best buddies kind of thing. It was almost like a bromance subplot that I enjoyed in the movie, and carries forth for me until the end, and I'm pretty okay. But yeah, the movie is kind of fascinating. It's kind of fun. It's a lighthearted overall movie. I know it's heavy with the thematic stuff, but it's easy to watch. I mean, and it's yeah, it's fun. I mean, the good portion, first half of the movie, is almost entirely just them training in the camp. And a great scene comes after that when they're done with the camping and or training camp, and they have to come back to their school for the first day of school, right? And when they come back, even though they overcame some hurdles, and they're still like, I mean, it's not perfect, but they overcame some stuff in camping. They managed to do a lot of work together. The coach managed to train them extremely strictly and hard and all that. Even though they succeeded a lot coming back to the real world on the first day of school, it's like a gut punch all over again to all the racial changes that's happening. So like, I found that kind of like a smack in the face that the movie kind of needed to use. And it was a really cool scene overall, as a thematic device. So yeah, I liked it. Remember the times. And Denzel Washington kills it. He's awesome. He plays like a motherfucker, like a strict motherfucker, really well. So I mean, who hasn't seen it? But whoever hasn't, I recommend it, even if you're not into sports movies, which I'm not. And I didn't even know there was two different coaches, for one for the offensive side and one for the defensive side. I thought it was just one coach for both. I haven't already.
Well, there's the head coach. There's an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator, if you want to have both.
Oh, okay. Depending on what you were.
Because if he, let's say, let's, offensive. Right. Let's say, exactly. Let's say the offensive coach, or the head coach is an offensive guy. So if he doesn't need an offensive coordinator, because he will be that, he'll do that. And the defensive guy will run it. But in the end, if the head coach goes, it is what it is, I'm gonna play this play on defense, the defense coordinator can't say shit. So.
Sports!
Okay, sports. Yeah, I didn't know, because his sports defensive ball. Coach was the old coach of that team. He was like knocked down or demoted, maybe.
Correct.
And the defensive coach was the white guy, and everyone wanted him to be the head coach again. And there was some strife there throughout the whole movie about it. And they kept talking about that to each other. It's a defensive side. Leave me to it. You just worry about the offense. They just kept saying that to each other. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know it was so separate like that. So then, you know, you learn something new every day. That's all I'm saying.
This is unreal how you're talking about this movie. Like,
what do you mean?
It's just unreal. It's like kind of, I don't know, whatever.
So. Like a caveman? Like, it just came out of the cave? For the first time, that kind of feel?
Sort of, I guess. I don't know. It's just more like, I know you've seen this movie because we've seen it together. And it's, I don't know, it's just something that's pretty self-explanatory. You feel like it's, you said that there's a lot of movies that are very similar. Like, all sports movies, I guess, are the same. But really, they have seen
a lot of
them
are, though.
They have same themes, but there's not that many. There's not as many as you think there is. You know, not all of them are great either. There's just like maybe like five good ones. Five really, really good ones, should I say.
Well, okay. I just treat them the same way a rom-com is treated. Like, I mean, for us, because we're all of us communally not super into rom-coms. So because a lot of them to us, they feel the similar. Even though they're all different, though. They're played by different people. They're all showing different aspects of whatever life they're in or whatever the hell. Sure, that's what makes them different. And some of them are spectacularly written, some of them are spectacularly thematically done or acted really well, and some of them are not. But we feel like we've seen most of them, if not all. It feels like we've seen them all, even though obviously it's not right, it's not true. Luke just saw one recently. I'm going to see one in the future, I'm sure. I have ones that are my favorites, even though it's not my go-to genre. I feel the same way for sports movies, especially football or basketball, that kind of like sports teams movies. And like, I feel like I've seen The Replacements, and I've also seen The Whole Nine Yards, or not The Whole Nine Yards, The Longest Yard, sorry. And I've seen all these, so I feel like I've seen them all. So they're all going to win at the end. So like, you know, that's just the way I come into it.
No, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. But obviously they're all different. But I like this one. So there you go. Remember the Titans, football, yeah.
20 years ago, finally.
20 years ago. I saw a movie, not 20 years ago, but not from 20 years ago, but it's from 2009. It's called Chloe. Anyone heard of Chloe?
Negative.
Is that the one where the guy hires this chick?
Something like that. I'm about to read it. Yeah, I think it might be Right. Suspecting her husband of infidelity, a gynecologist, Dr. Catherine Stewart, hires an escort named Chloe in order to test his faithfulness. Soon, the relationships between all three intensify. And is written, directed by Adam Egoyan. Written by Aaron Caseta Wilson and Fontaine, based on something, on a different movie called Natalie, I guess. And this movie stars Julianne Moore as that doctor that hires Chloe. Chloe's played by Amanda Seyfried, who is awesome.
Why I know her.
Yes, that's why you know her. And the husband is Liam Neeson. So a really good cast. I'm just going to say, really good cast right there. I've never seen the movie. I've heard of it here and there. And I saw it. It's on Netflix. Did I see it on Netflix? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. I saw it on Netflix, so watch it there, guys, if you're interested. It's a fascinating movie, interesting premise, and it does just follow that really well. Like, it starts off with the husband, you know, being away on a business teacher's conference, something stupid like that, and he gives an excuse that he missed his plane to get back. And as on his birthday, and the wife had planned this surprise birthday party with all his friends, and he never showed up. And with that, it sounded shady too. And it sounds shady because he's clearly lying to her. You see it, and he's about to hang out with a bunch of students, and some of them are female students. So you immediately, the movie already gives you all the assumptions in the world. He is lying, and it does seem it is for infidelity, and that's what sparks her interest. She meets Chloe in a restaurant, and she finds out, and she's a hooker. And it starts like that. And it's really weird dynamic because she hires her and Chloe comes back with information and the information is weird and fucked up. It's like one of those anti-relationship movies, like what would you do if, right, kind of movies. It has there's a lot of movies like this that has, you know, like you think of movies that test relationships, like Marriage Story maybe recently, or what's the one that Gone Girl. Gone Girl is a good one. You know, things like that. Now, those movies are different also, but this Chloe kind of fits in the same realm of the questions one can ask your spouse if they're watching it together. And Chloe is super fascinating. It has a really good ending, I think, that I didn't really see coming, because I like many of the people in the audience, must have felt that, yeah, it has to be this one way. There's no way it could be a different thing. But it's super interesting. So I would suggested for you guys. It's my favorite out of the bunch here, Chloe. Really interesting. Amanda Seyfried is really good in the movie. So yeah, check it out. And no, there's no like nudity, so don't watch
it. Yeah, well, no, I think I saw it like on, I don't know, it was like an HBO or on cable TV once when I was out on deployment, because I do remember Amanda Seyfried and Liam Neeson.
Yeah, yeah. Super, super interesting movie. Fascinating. I want to show it to Lexi even. So yeah, Chloe on Netflix, check it out. And that's all I have for recent discoveries. And so we're gonna take a little break here.
Five hours later.
When we come back, we'll do our first movie of the evening, which is what, Luke?
Blow the Man Down.
You said that really like a fisherman. Nice. So stay with us.
On an old England isle in a good seaport town.
Come away, blow the man down.
Can you start over? I'm confused.
It was confusing.
But you had to do it right.
Oh, no. I lost control. With a brick.
You said it was a harpoon.
So what are we going to do now?
I should have just called the police.
Hello? Priscilla Conley? You have a small skiff, right?
Could get a little grody. A body washed up on the rocks.
Enid's business is bringing shame to the town.
Blow the Man Down. Mary Beth and Priscilla Connolly attempt to cover up a gruesome run-in with a dangerous man. To conceal their crime, the sisters must go into the criminal underbelly of their hometown, uncovering the town's darkest secrets.
Wow. Why are you yourself? Because
make it sound like so crazy, and it's just like, eh.
I guess that's the way you read it, yeah. All right.
Yeah, an Amazon original, available on Prime Video.
Yes.
What did you guys think of the movie, Oscar?
I thought it was, it's a fine movie. I didn't, I felt like I never super got into it, and at some points I felt lost. Because I didn't know what kind of movie I was watching. I mean, I knew nothing. You just told me blow the man down. I looked it up.
Yeah, same thing. I knew nothing.
It, and I went into it, which is fine. That's a good way to start a movie. But having not any anticipations for it or not knowing anything, plot or a trailer or anything, having gotten into it, when the movie was going, after like its first act, it was like I kept seeing weird stuff in the movie. Like weird things were happening and weird, you know, character changes, POVs, you know, when it shifted to different scenes. I felt they were weird and they felt like erratic. And it wasn't until the end that I kind of understood better. But even then, like, I felt like the movie gave me this sense of weirdness to it. And I have some great positive stuff to say about the movie. It's not like a bad movie or anything. But the movie was it's a strange watch. It was just a strange experience for me watching it. And as a first impressions overall on it. But good actor, though. I love the acting in there.
Really? Okay.
I did.
Yeah. I'll give you my thing. I really thought it was an okay movie. I thought the plot was kind of like meh. And I thought that the sisters were kind of being stupid at certain points. Where, like, you know, come on, how do you fucking miss that knife? It's right there. You know? Yeah. It's dumb. Stupid shit like that kind of threw me off. And then, like, how they were talking about the whole town's secret and, like, their mom and the past and everything. They're all... One of them gets all up and, you know, gets her panties in a bunch and shit. Thing, like, overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
And Ralph.
Yeah, I guess I'm mirroring things here because it was all right. I mean, I felt like the movie could have done a better job at getting to, like, how, I guess, the town's secret overall, because the town does have a big secret. Basically, it's the, yeah. Other than that, I mean, the girl stuff, I mean, it's funny because the movie feels like it doesn't take place in the United States, but it does.
It's the East Coast.
It is, but
kind of not the United States.
It is, but it isn't. It's like this weird small town that's totally away from everybody, you know, like,
right.
And it's like whoever ends up there is either you ended up there for whatever reason and you grew up there, or if you ended up there, you're probably like, even the guy who says it, he's like, yeah, I don't know how I ended up in this shithole, like, and you're just like, it is kind of like that, right? But at the same time, they're a port town, so it's kind of important, you know, that they're there,
right,
for a reason.
Fish,
right? Yeah, what else?
Horse.
Yeah, so that. I just felt like when I was watching it, I felt like I didn't even know like what time frame I was in. I know they're talking about Tom Brady and everything in there, as they like to say, and so it's obviously modern times. But it didn't feel like I was watching a movie that was took place, I guess, in present time.
Yeah, it definitely has that.
Yeah, it has that weird thing going for it. And yeah, there's like simple things that are, it just felt kind of tropey on a kind of other things. So yeah, it was okay at best. That's what I'll leave it at.
I think the biggest power of the movie is kind of what Ralph was tapping into. And it's really amazing. This movie made me feel like I couldn't escape the town. This movie made me feel what it felt like to live there. It really did make me feel that way along the way with the mystery and the people talking and stuff. And all that fucking singing and the fishermen. And
yeah, but what it doesn't make you feel is how the girls are feeling.
No, definitely not the older one or the one that's in the one that doesn't live. The one that's not from college.
Mary Beth?
I forgot the names. I really did.
It's Mary Beth and Priscilla.
The one that runs the store.
Yes, that one.
It doesn't make you feel
every time. Yeah, yeah, and you feel like I think you get a real feel for the town. Like every time she's cooking like fish, and then when that cop comes by to talk, and he's like, he smells the fish, right? And he instantly knows what kind of fish it is because that's what they're in. They're in a fish town,
right?
You know, like everyone knows what everyone's like. You can just tell from the smell. For me, I would just be like, oh, is that fish? And that's it. I wouldn't be able to pin down what kind of fish it is.
Is that fish, or did you open your legs?
Oh Jesus!
Oh,
you're gonna be single forever. Yeah,
don't threaten me with a good time.
Enjoy it. Just enjoy it. Yeah, and I think that's the one thing that I think the movie did right, and I think it worked hard to do that because of all its details to do that, and that stuff I enjoyed. The hidden underbelly aspect of the town was kind of fascinating to watch. I mean, to understand that these women of power kind of like grew into this job. And Margot Martindale, who I thought is the one best actress in this movie, she's like this, the leader of it. And
the head madam?
Yeah, the head madam. And her power waning along the way with strange secret betrayals and whatever, and the knife and all that. But I think I agree with all of you that the weakest link was the main two actors, who are the sisters. Not just because of their actions, which I agree overall. Some of those times, Luke, I'm with you. It was kind of dumb or cliche, or how do you miss that? But that didn't bother me so much because, I don't know, I just didn't let it faze me for some reason. It just didn't bother me this time. But along the way, I felt like I cared the least about them, or I felt like off with them in general, both of them, together and separated. Like, I just didn't care. I didn't care that the cop liked her or not. I didn't give a shit about any of that. And the movie did put that a lot in front of me, and I didn't care for it. And therefore, I didn't care if they lived or died either. So,
right. I mean, no, that's true.
Or gets to jail or not. Or so that's, yeah, it's a big problem. It's a big problem to have in a murder mystery where they're the two innocents. Yeah, it's not good. But I wish we got like a, I wish the whole movie was more of the flashback on the, like when the mother's heyday with the other character. I would have loved that story way more.
Maybe they'll do a prequel.
No, I mean, I don't think so. But I'm saying that would have been a more interesting story, because everything they talk about, how the town used to be, how it led to where it is now, how it led to all those betrayals and murder and people being stuffed in ice boxes, like all of that would have been, well, way cooler if we seen it like the happening back then, like like starting up or in the middle of it, but not during the end of it, you know.
I try to protect these girls, but I can't do everything.
What did she mean by that? It used to be real bad around here.
Get away from me!
If it's not Enid's girls, then it's our own daughters. We wanted something better for you.
By starting up.
Go on, drink up. Drink up. A lot of people underestimate women. That's why they can get away with a lot.
Nan, what do you know about the Connolly sisters?
Real nice girls.
Sure about that?
I hate that when a movie like introduces a better story of itself. Like,
right.
I don't like that. Because it's just like, why don't you put that movie on? Anyway. But yeah, I guess we all feel similar, just different reasons for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to highlight, Luke? I mean, we just talked briefly in general about it. But
I don't know. I just think I hated the sisters so much. Like, I mean, from the get-go, you could have just spun this whole thing around. Okay, so yeah, you killed this guy, right? You call the cops right there and then. Like, hey, this guy's got a gun in his car. It looks like he tried to kill someone. He tried to get handsy with me. And I, you know, defended myself.
Yeah.
That would have been a clear-cut self-defense case. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So you I never hated them, but you hated them.
Oh, they're so stupid.
I mean, so I didn't care enough to hate them.
Go to college. She needs to go to college and get an education. Yeah, she's dumb.
I'm like Oscar in this one. I wanted to care at first, especially when they're fucking up a lot in the beginning, where especially the young sister who's just continues to fuck up, lie to the sister, the older sister about
right. Yeah. And I found the knife. I threw it off the bridge. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Shit like that. But I wanted to complain about her. But at the same time, I was just like, as the movie kept going, I was just like, I don't really care. Like, I just. there's not enough. It was just it wasn't enough. It was like there was nothing driving me to care about these characters. I felt like the movie wanted me to pay more attention to there's this weird thing in this town like going on that we're all pussyfooting around it, and it all revolved around their mother who died, which is the beginning of the movie, which was like, well, I want to see that character sounds cool. Everyone's talking fucking great stuff about this person. you know? And I'm just like, that'd be awesome. Let's watch this first.
They were like powerful, awesome people that came up out of this male-heavy, dominated fisherman town.
Right. Yeah. No. But they
would have loved to see that.
Right. I would have loved to see that instead. Right. Yeah. That story would have been great. I think that would have been a great story to watch.
Dude, I bet you that old lady at the end who was washing away that cooler that they stuffed the guy in, she's probably a fucking G right there. She'll be like, off the motherfuckers.
100%.
Them old ladies were Gs for sure. Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
They got shit done.
Give me that movie, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you guys have all seen that Scorsese movie from last year. What's the name of it? I'm thinking. The Irishman.
I have not. Irishman.
Okay.
Yeah, I have.
Okay, well, I know you have, because we reviewed it for the show, but in The Irishman, you know, we have Robert De Niro, like, in an old folks home, right? Kind of like reliving his life, and we're seeing that reliving, essentially, right? That's not a spoiler, it's the opening of it, and we tap back every once in a while. Like, that movie with Margot Martindale and some old folks, or in her old house, like, being old and being awesome, like Margot Martindale, just as awesome as Robert De Niro is, it would have been awesome to just flashback to her life, you know? Like, that would have been like the Irishman for this movie, you know? That would have been a cool... I don't know. That would have been cool. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It made me think of that. But, yeah. I guess this movie was a dud overall. Like I said, I love some stuff in it, like the town thing and the acting. I mean, they acted the shit out of it. Even the girls did. I just didn't care because the situations around them were just so strange or stupid, and I just didn't care. The plots made them did not defend them. And, you know, into giving them a shit about it. But, yeah, no. Yeah, whatever, man. I'm good. I'm done.
All right.
I'm done with this movie. All right.
Overall, would you watch this movie again? Either of you? No? Okay, good.
No,
I would not. I mean, I like weird movies. This is one of those weird movies, and I don't regret watching it or anything. But, you know, I saw it. Not for me. Let's move on.
Got it. Move on. All right.
All right. So
available on Amazon Video.
Prime Video, yes.
It's free. Might as well just watch it.
Yeah, that was a...
I guess if you want to go that way, yeah.
That was a really short review. I was sure we don't want to say anything else. I mean, we don't have to. That's why we have three reviews, so that's okay. Not a big deal, I guess. All right, so we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll review our next movie, which is what, Luke?
The Report.
Correct. Let's get on that. Stay with us.
Let me ask you a question. Why did the CIA torture people, lie about it, and then hide it from history?
After 9/11, everyone was scared. Scared it might happen again.
We need to stop attacks in the future.
And we are in whatever business it takes to get the job done.
Find out exactly what they did.
One detainee, they waterboarded him 183 times.
If it works, why do you need to do it 183 times?
Maybe when the report comes out, people will finally see that.
They claim they saved lives, but what they really did was make it impossible to prosecute a mass murderer, because if what we did to him ever came out in the court of law, the case is over. The guy planned 9/11.
The CIA said the program wouldn't cause lasting harm. So how long is Gul Rockman going to be dead for?
The Report. Idealistic Senate staffer Daniel J. Jones, texted by his boss to lead an investigation into the CIA's post 9/11 detention and interrogation program, uncovers shocking secrets.
Oh God, again with the secrets.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now you got to make the apocalypse now end with secrets, right? You know that, right?
Okay. Challenge accepted.
Got it.
All right.
Done.
Apocalypse. Directed by Scott Z. Burns. Starring Adam Driver. Other people that I don't know. But John Hamm's in it.
And that Benning is a big actress.
That Benning is, yeah.
Really? What is she her in?
American Beauty.
That movie's super old.
No, I mean, she's been in many movies since then and before that, too. What the fuck?
I don't know. Never heard of her.
What the fuck?
We should have an Ed Benning marathon then.
Clearly. I would love that.
She was in Captain Marvel. She plays the Doctor.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, hey.
Wow.
Good movie.
Imagine a Marvel movie. Fuck you.
Wait, okay, but primarily
the speech with Denzel Washington, that was a good one.
Yeah. You gotta bring up something closer to recent Oscar.
I said 20th Century Women. That was definitely like 2008.
That he would watch. Come on, that's why.
That's his problem.
Look, 90% of this movie is fucking Kylo Ren. Okay, so let's stick with him.
Okay, I guess you're right.
All right. So hey, Ralph, what did you think of this one?
I actually liked this movie a lot more than I thought I would. Okay. Yeah, a lot more than I thought I would. So it was, for the type of movie it is, of just kind of, excuse me, I had a burp. For the type of movie it is, it's just kind of like information driven. It was cool, like to see them like dig up these reports. It was really weird to like pull out all this information, being like with your hands tied behind your back, at the same time, like finding legal loopholes. It's super weird, like super weird things going on in the movie. But at the same time, just the information itself. Obviously, it has its personal narrative, and it's going by the information it's given, and it's because it also does this thing in the movie where, as they're uncovering report in the reports, emails, and everything, they do reenactments of like what happened according to what the report says. So, as they're reading it, they're reenacting it. So it almost feels biased because it kind of puts it in a bad light of everything that it's talking about of the interrogation program. Everything that you see like this crazy shit going on, and you're like, what the fuck, right? But it almost puts it in a bad light, but I want to say it's like a yes and no thing, because it's literally dragging the information out that they're giving them, so they're just kind of reading it out loud, you know, like, the information was bad in itself, but it still feels like the movie's painting a picture of what it wants you to do, you know, at the same time. It's just interesting to see, I guess, both ways. It could be both ways, but you know it's not. So yeah, the information is super cool to watch. But I overall had a really good viewing experience, and more enlightening, and really shitty to hear that for someone who's just trying to do their job, they get like fucked over for it. Yeah. So yeah.
All right. Yeah, I also really enjoyed this movie. I mean, it's kind of like a up my alley type of thing, because obviously it's kind of biopic-y, but it obviously just takes place like in one, you know, person of one aspect of this guy's life, where he's worked on his report for X amount of years. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I like it. Just the whole uncovering thing, and it's like the whole thing is like, how do I get this information out? You know, because obviously he becomes very, very invested in it. You know, so it becomes like a personal thing to him, even though it's not supposed to. He's not supposed to have his like feelings in or whatever, but he's pissed that, you know, people were killed by these CIA interrogations, and he wanted the people to, you know, get reprimanded for it.
Yeah, he's definitely by the book kind of guy. So when he sees things like people doing not stuff by the book, he gets really mad, I guess. So yeah.
Yeah. So overall, it kind of reminded me of Zero Dark Thirty. Without the craziest ending. So kind of just, you know, procedural, just going through stuff, kind of, you know, it's like, man, if they made my job into a movie, it probably would suck, but they made this one look good.
I can see that.
Right. Yeah. Oscar, what did you think of the report?
So I don't love it like you guys do. I thought it was a fine movie. I felt like it was a little too preachy. It felt like even though the movie had a lot of data or facts or information, I mean, it is a movie. It's just a movie. It's not a documentary. Right? But the stuff that it's saying definitely is.
Right.
Fucking happens. I'm not saying it's not based on reality. It is based on reality. But I feel like it got on its soapbox a little too heavy using Kylo Ren there to give those opinions.
Poor Adam Driver.
Yeah, he was the architect of the writer to spell out his grievances on the government during this time period. And I mean, if it was like 50% less of that, I would love the movie more, or at least I would have more respect for it. But I felt like it was a little too preachy and kind of annoying some of those times. And I think it got in the way a little bit to the overall story of what's supposed to be really happening here. And I think the nuances of the whatever the report and the whole thing with the CIA and stopping and letting him get out and stuff, I think that was fine. It was good. I feel like if the movie, you know, the movie almost treats it like a criminal investigation, but not really. And I felt like if it felt more like that, more like, I don't know, can't think of a good example, but maybe Zero Dark Thirty, because I think Zero Dark Thirty does that more. Treats it like a criminal investigation, like one giant murder, right? And trying to find one guy in somewhere in the world. But you know, I don't know. It's. I think everything that it has to say, I think other movies have been doing already. And other than the details, which are new or different than we haven't seen in movies before, I don't think it had anything a lot to say, because all it was just yelling its opinions out. And again, I agree with them. I'm with him. I'm on his side. But I feel like I just got in the way a lot. But I still like the movie. And Kylo Ren is interesting watching him develop like emotions, even if they were like hating, like hateful emotions, because he was so, like Ralph said, by the book, kind of like, you know, just wants to make a difference, right? But he doesn't show it until he's angry about this. You know, that's when he really shows his caring for it, is when he is doing this report, this 5-year report. So yeah, you know, I'm just mixed on it a little bit in there. So yeah, that's just what I think about it.
CIA did their own investigation into the death of Ghoul Rockman. The officer in charge was recommended for a performance bonus. They promoted him. He's still out there in the field.
Well, are you accusing the CIA of murder, Dan? Because that sounds like where this is going.
We have proof. The deputy director coached the officer in charge how to cover up what happened. Told him to be careful what he put in writing. So why would they need to cover it up if they were following standard operating procedure? Why didn't they tell the committee? Why didn't they tell you?
I'm going to need to review all this personally. It's very disconcerting.
Disconcerting? Very disconcerting.
Dan, you need to be careful here. You're getting emotionally involved.
They fucking killed a guy and nobody was held accountable? We don't know he was a terrorist. We barely even know his name.
I understand. And what you need to understand is that her name is going on this report, not yours. Senate staff doesn't have to run for your election, but she does.
Their legal argument said EITs wouldn't cause lasting harm. So how long is Ghoul Rockman going to be dead for?
Yeah, I do hear what you're saying. Like, that's what, kind of what I was getting at about the whole, like, it's, I feel like they're doing it on purpose. Like, it obviously has the movie has an agenda of telling you, like, this is where the movie stands, I guess, by showing you those scenes, by, you know, doing things like that in the movie. I would say that probably that's the disliked portion of it. But like I said, like you said also, it's a movie. It's not a documentary, and it's going to do whatever it wants in the end. It's not going to give you that actual information like a documentary will, and just give you the information and let you deal with that. Yeah. It's more like it has to drive a narrative as well. So, I mean, I didn't hate it for it as much as you did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and hate is strong, obviously, but...
No, I know.
Yeah, it just didn't sit well with me as much, and I had something I was going to say a second ago, and I lost it. This movie is more like, it's more anti-CIA and pro-Senate. It isn't like just anti-government or anti-America. It's not like that. It has a more nuanced feeling, for sure, and I like that about it, for sure, because a lot of times you see one or the other. It's anti-government or not. But this is, yeah, definitely more anti-CIA specifically, and what they did, specifically that organization and how they fucked up, the steps to fucking up. The two quote-unquote psychologists that have never, you know, never actually tortured someone, all of a sudden they're implementing all these torturing things. And then pro-Senate, because of the power of the Senate and the power of what they're in committee and what they're in the chairs of whatever they're in to organize and compile investigations and reports. Like, the movie has those strong opinions, for sure, and it's showing them with Annette Bening and so on. But yeah, that just stuff in general, I liked it. But you know, like when you see, like, I don't know, when I see people like glibly dismissing these things or like quitting because they're reading so much about it, I guess it just felt strange in the movie. It felt a little melodramatic. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm positive people would do those things. It just didn't sit right with me. Like that one lady that was one of the investigators on his team left. Remember, she took a different job.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But she really, but I mean, she said it was because it was a better job and all that, but it really, the movie made it clear that it was because she's tired of seeing all these these horrible things happening.
Yeah, right? No, but at the same time, it was like that in time. What are these? They were like years there, right? I mean, time was just like a vacuum there.
Oh, yeah, no. So. It sounds like an awful job.
No, yeah, 100%. Wait, I mean, I think what surprised me most in that scene was just the fact that time was flying by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's in general all I have to say about it. Kylo Ren's good, though.
Right. What is good?
Kylo Ren can act.
Oh, well, yeah, he's Kylo Ren. Come on. All right. Hey, I did dig this movie, so hey, might watch it again. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't meet the level of Snowden or like.
Yeah, he's no Snowden. I mean, he could have been if he leaked the stuff at the end.
I'm talking about the movie or Zero Dark Thirty. It doesn't meet the level of those movies for me because I think those movies tap into a bigger, richer theme that they explore. I think just for me, and those are about very similar things that the report is about. And I just felt like not only have I seen them before, but these movies for me did it better. And they also did other things better. So, like, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah, that's the report. Anything else you want to add, Luke, since you like them more? Anything you want to defend or talk about specifically or a plot point or something?
No, it's funny because it's funny when the senator, she actually mentioned, like, Snowden and how she hates him for leaking information. Right. Even though, like, she's the person that wants to get the right information, you know, from... whatever.
Yeah.
My God, I thought that was a really interesting way, you know, them to say it.
Yeah.
If that was her opinion or if that's like the movie maker's opinion or.
Yeah, who knows, right? I mean, there is a lot of complexity with that. Like a lot of people who definitely agree with Snowden that they should, that the NSA shouldn't be doing that, don't agree with him the way he did it. Right? Like that's right. Complicated. It's like there, that's complicated as fuck. There's people who are on all sides of that aisle. So, yeah, I can see that. I mean, you and I, Luke, I believe we're on the same side on that, right? We kind of think Snowden heroically or no?
I'm still on the fence here.
Okay. You know, I thought you were because you kind of you like Washington Citizen 4 and the Oliver Stone.
Because I'm so conflicted.
Got it. I'm not as conflicted, but I definitely understand Annette Bening, the senator's point of view, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, it's fucked up though. The whole thing is fucked up though. It's everything. What the psychologists were doing, the way they were presenting it when they were first getting that meeting.
Oh yeah,
it was all ridiculous. I can't believe it's just ridiculous. I can't believe all this stuff went as far as it did and as long as it did.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's nutty. It's just really weird.
Hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, I guess so. It is what it is. Is that all we have to say on the report?
Take that as a yes.
I think so.
I feel like this is one of those movies. I'm not saying I want to do this. I'm just going to put it out there in case we want to talk about it. And this is one of those movies that opens up that political talking point. This is the time to make that conversation if you guys want to. Nothing wrong. I mean, no. I know we strictly we do movie reviews, and the movie reviews that we're talking about its merits, and that's fine and good, and I'm down with that. We just did it, but like. But there's stuff in this movie, though, that are heavy to today, you know.
All right. Do you think the CIA should have done what they did?
No.
All right, then. Same here. I mean, because if that was me, shit.
No, but also, like, here's a follow-up question to that. Okay, we all say no. I assume, Ralph, you didn't want them to do that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, now... The follow-up
yes, question, I did not want them to do that.
Yeah. Can you understand a nation or an organization like the CIA reacting to 9/11 that way?
Yes. I do understand that, but I also understand the fact that it's like you let it go on for like a decade or plus.
Right.
like you
can forgive a year or two, but you can't forgive a decade.
Well, I can forgive some time for sure because you don't know any better and you're just reacting and, you know, that's fine. But... I mean, after a certain time, and you know, well, how much more can you give it? And it's like that's the real problem I had with, I guess, with overall with like the whole thing. So they just kept going,
and that whole element, and that the movie, the report does, it kind of makes it explicit that, you know, the presidents didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, they kept them in the dark,
and they kept them in the dark. You know, right. And then you bring up the other question that I thought of when the movie told when the movie said that to me. I was like, then, I mean, how do you trust when you employ secret assassins, like people who train in being secretive and in the dark? How do you trust what they say, even if you hire and train them?
Right. Well, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like you're better off not knowing so you don't get implicated. It's one of those weird areas, right?
You're paying a guy to lie to you and to hack your shit.
Well, you're paying a guy to omit the truth, right? Not necessarily lie to you. Omit the parts that
a lot of people omit.
This makes me look bad.
No, I get you. I get you what you're saying, but it's like hey, listen, I don't want to make you look bad or worse or whatever the case is, right?
Yeah.
So let me not tell you this. It is one of those like weird things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like we're all on the same ground here. But yeah, overall, I guess that's the only thing I can think of. But yeah, I figured that, you know, because with last week's review or whatever, with Chasing Amy, you know, we talked about our personal, like, nothing wrong with talking about these political insanities.
My feelings? You all know my feelings?
I mean, I know you have very little, but whatever they are, sure. Yeah, it's a fucked up, I mean, and, you know, to a lot of people, and you can see this in a lot of people and the way they talk about it, either on Facebook or in person, you know, you can see a lot of the draining, like this, the ongoing disappointment people have for bigger government, right? You can see that disappointment when they read stuff like what's happening in the report with the torturing, with the CIA and stuff. Like, and if a big element like the CIA is doing that or has done that, and worse before, you know, you think of Project Whatever, Wormwood or whatever, then what else is happening, right? How else can you trust? Why would you trust the government and other things, right? And that's how people, like, lose confidence, right?
Right,
and
right, people, huh?
And lose, yeah, you can see a lot of, like, stigmatism happening, and that creates more problems. It just does. It creates more problems. It doesn't solve anything. By hating them, it doesn't solve anything. But there you go. So yeah, it's fucked up. It's all fucked up. It's all levels of fucked up. It's not just that they torture these things. It's the way they handle it, the way they haven't handled it well still, the way they, the way they're portraying themselves, portraying themselves to us, the American public. They're fucking up.
Yeah.
And then we're fucking up because we don't care what they think anymore or what they do anymore. And so, yeah, it's not good. So yeah,
It's hard to, I don't know. They do a good job of keeping the light not shine on them.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're like mushrooms, right? Yeah, I hear you. All right, so I think that's it now on the report. Unless for real, you guys want to have something else or add something else to it? We're gonna take a little break here, and when we come back, we'll do our last movie from 1979, Apocalypse Now. That's right, Luke picked Apocalypse Now. So find out what that's about if you haven't known, and stay with us.
You smell it! Ah! Napalm, son! Nothing else in the world smells like that! I love the smell of napalm in the morning. You know, one time we had a hail bomb for 12 hours. When it was all over, I walked up. We didn't find one of them, not one stinking dink body. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? A whole hill. Smells like victory. Someday this war's gonna end.
All right. Apocalypse Now. A U.S. Army officer serving in Vietnam is tasked with assassinating a renegade special forces colonel who sees himself as a god, and he has to keep it a secret.
That's good.
That's so stupid. That was so shoehorned in.
That's like I want to write my put this in your own words, and then you just add it.
You love it.
Fantastic. Webster's Dictionary defines apocalypse as.
All right.
Okay.
Directed by the Francis Ford Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Martin Sheen, not Charlie Sheen, Marlon Brando, Robert Duvall, Lawrence Fishburne, Harrison Ford's got a little thing in there too. A lot of motherfuckers.
Yeah, for sure.
But the main guy is Martin Sheen.
I was about to say, let me fuck this one up.
Yeah.
All right, so this is a, what is it, Sight and Sound list movie?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's in the top 100 movies of all time.
Mm-hmm. I think it was number 14 or something.
Was it really? Damn. It's
pretty high. I forget.
All right.
Yeah, number 14. I remember that, right. Okay. Whew, this is my first time actually watching this movie.
Damn.
Have you guys watched it before?
Yes.
Oscar, yes.
Yes. Yeah, the last time I saw the Redux version, and I remember there being a lot more parts with him and Saigon in it, and just, I guess, going crazy and stuff, but yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I think we watched just the regular version, the 2.5-hour-ish one.
Yeah, the one I saw was 3 hours, for sure.
All right. That's a hell of a movie.
Yeah.
Let me start off with my first impressions.
Yeah.
I loved this movie. It was pretty amazing. Like, I love how it was shot. How you have, like, there's like these like five different segments you could break this movie up into, and each segment is like so unique to itself. Like, with like the characters that come in and out, you know, and like with how it looks and how everything. It's amazing. It's like this movie must have been production hell to make.
Yeah. I tell you, the making of documentary is famous on this movie.
Really?
Yes.
I need to see this movie now, documentary.
It has a title. It's called Hearts of Darkness.
Okay.
It's messed up. Yeah.
And there's a lot of things from this movie that I see like people like, you know, used into other things, like with the helicopters, you know, flying over like the village, playing Ride of the Valkyries and fucking mowing down motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Sure, I've seen that adapted into something else.
Yeah.
Or when Martin Sheen's character comes out of like the fucking swamp thing and like with the whole camouflage face. Yeah.
Mud face. Yeah. Like a mud.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think of how Predator maybe got that idea from it, because of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay.
Remember when he's all in mud and he's hiding from the Predator?
Right, yeah. Yep. That's what I thought too, right away.
They probably took it from there, or had inspired from there.
Yeah,
I'm glad you
it's got
it.
That very...
Because it's got, this is not likable for a lot of people.
No, it's a heavy movie. It's got that napalm line that's been used all over this, you know?
Yeah, but it's also like overplayed, I think. It's just a simple line that's being said in the movie.
It totally is. I thought it was gonna have way more impact.
Well, yeah,
and then I'm like, oh, that was it, huh?
Yeah. No, that's funny how that works, right? The original of it, it's like, I don't know, just like one of many crazy lines he says, but like that's the one that everyone takes out of proportion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I'm glad you watched it. I'm glad you liked it, Luke, because I've always liked this movie. I mean, Vietnam for some reason. I mean, Vietnam is like. I mean, I'm sorry. It's a terrible thing that happened. We shouldn't.
Yeah, America's fuck up.
Yeah, America's huge fuck up. Everyone knows by now. And I mean, that the famous Ken Burns documentary just put the final nail on it as far as what you can possibly.
What was that documentary?
It's called The Vietnam War.
It's called Vietnam. That's it. It's on Netflix right now. I've only seen the first part because it's very long. It's a tome, and it's all interviews. It's a documentary. So anyway. There's been Vietnam for all. I mean, it's bad, terrible. We all agree, but it did lead to some amazing movies. I mean, so much great nuance has been made by people who either grew up there, you know, going there and coming out of it alive, or growing up around in America during that time, or on the Vietnam side. There are so many things. Oliver Stone has made a career on the fact that he went to Vietnam and made movies about it. I mean, Platoon alone, right, of course. And then you see Oliver Stone Stanley Kubrick took a stab at it. Francis Ford Coppola took it. I mean, all these great fucking filmmakers took a huge chunk out of the Vietnam experience, and they portrayed it, you know, all differently, you know, all similar kind of, but not really, and are all still with their own style. And Apocalypse Now is one of the best. And yeah, it's really something. This movie's nutty. It's messed up. It also doesn't like let go either. It's just like it's you know, it's just so heavy. That's the best word. It's just heavy. The movie's heavy.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know where to start with this. What do you want to start, Luke?
The beginning. What do you think about how they established him as a character? Obviously, he chose to go back into Vietnam.
Yes.
And he's got this whole segment where he's just in his hotel room, like,
in Saigon,
getting blitzed off his fucking mind. Right. And he's all just...
Well, it's
he's like, you know,
it's crazy how they get into, like, how, like, to have, it's either you had like two things to do in Vietnam. Either you were enthralled by what Vietnam had to, like, which was the craziness of, you know, the Charlies, as they put it, and having to deal with them and basically almost like living their lifestyle or just how they had all their stuff set up and everything. And not knowing anything else, almost like taking apart yourself and making yourself a part of that so you can deal with that. And then, or the people who didn't want to be there and just wanted to do their stint and get the heck out of there. So one of the two, and obviously he was the one where he, you know, the former, where he wanted to be there. He didn't know how to live life without being there. It's like he didn't feel fulfilled anywhere else in life besides Vietnam. And he says it in the beginning of the movie, which is kind of powerful because, like, that's how he goes back. What did he say? The only words I said to my wife was yes to a divorce.
Or something. Right.
That's crazy.
When he came back.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, you know, and then he's just blitzed because he's just waiting. He's just waiting to do something in Vietnam. He's like, he wants orders. He wants to work. He wants to do something in there. He's just right now, like, in transit. And he's like, I'm going crazy, going maddening. I mean, and
yeah, it feels like like the character in Rambo in First Blood.
A little bit, yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, dude! Oh, what the fuck? Fix your life.
I bought the collection. I'm gonna watch
you
them.
Have it?
Shut up! It's on my iTunes.
Let's watch it. Let's have a Netflix party on it. I'll watch it. Come on. Anyway. Fuck. Anyway, that character just came back from Vietnam. That's the whole purpose of it. And he's PTSD and all that. I feel like Martin Sheen is, a worser version of that. A worser version of Rambo, where he feels useful over there. Like, he was in charge. Like, Rambo has his whole spiel in it where he talks about how he was useful. He was in charge of, like, heavy machinery. They trusted him with all these things and operations, and he was important there. And he comes home, and he gets yelled at, spit on. He's treated like a homeless person. He's very different. You know, and that taken to the 10th degree is Martin Sheen. He didn't return. He returned for a bit, and like, fuck this shit. He went back. He can't not. He rewrote his DNA too far to cope there when he probably first started. And you either live through Vietnam by living through it, like surviving it, like, you know, like white knuckling it. You either white knuckle through it, which is very hard. It broke a lot of people. We see that evidence everywhere, from the people on the boat to, like, people he passes by, you know, soldiers, and then, or do what he did, is just like fucking lean into it. That's his life now. Like, he doesn't know a life beyond either killing, you know, what they call gooks, or what they or living under someone.
Charlie,
right? You know, going against Charlie and doing all the stuff there, because it gives them meaning, that the fact that the soldiers are there, it's fucked up. It's usually, mm-hmm. It gives you a wide perspective too, because even though we just see his perspective, his point of view, like his thoughts, we see a lot of stuff around him,
mm-hmm.
all the time.
I just, one of the first lines that I like that stood out for me, he said, like, every day, like, I stay in here, you know, Charlie gets stronger. Because while I'm here, they're like crouching in the fucking, like, the forest or whatever. And I'm like, damn, this guy's like really into it.
Yeah, that's like an ego trip too, because he's like, he feels like the enemy is winning because he's not over there keeping them down.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I, that's how I took it as well. I mean, he's also saying, like, he adds on to that where he's like, Charlie gets stronger, I get weaker, and then, like, the walls are getting shrink on him.
Right.
Right. And, like, it's crazy. Yeah, it's a it's like it's just an enthralling thing that he that they signed up for, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like how we get to find out so much about Colonel Kurtz way before we even meet him. We have a picture in our minds the whole time. You know, from that first meeting, that serious meeting with the Colonel and Harrison Ford and stuff, you know, like, and they start describing, you know, how he used to be. Like, oh yeah, he's an affable, witty person, super smart. He was on set to be a general. All this stuff they say, right? And but now he has his cult, and they're saying strange things. They call him unsound, and the way he says unsound, just something about that delivery. This is where the good filmmaking comes in, because the way they shoot that, it just feels so weird and heavy. And you're like, what the fuck? And then when you start reading you hear the voiceover of his dossier. And even the fucking main character, who's fucking out of his gourd insanity into this whole Vietnam thing, he can't believe how much of a 180 this guy did. You know, from being what he was to what he turned out.
Yeah, but it also feels like those guys there in the room are also like worried about him.
Yeah,
they're worried. Like,
yeah,
are we getting the right man for this job? You know, like almost
using the right tool, right?
Yeah, the right tool, exactly. You're using the right tool. And he obviously, like, he thinks before he has to say things. And he doesn't even know sometimes he responds late to one of the things where he's just like, oh, yeah, I guess I should answer this way because that's obviously how you want me to answer. You know, like...
Yeah, it almost feels like this is an insane classified case or assignment. An insane assignment that only an insane person can do, and this is the one they have. It's like they know they have to send a madman who's driven and insane to accomplish this. They know, not a regular soldier could do it. Not even a regular captain or major or someone higher can do it. It's just like, what a weird... I don't know. It's really weird. It feels very, like, secretive and, I don't know, dark. I don't know, the dark side of military operations, you know?
Right.
Yeah. What did you think of him, Luke, on the from the beginning on?
Deranged? I don't know. He was definitely very intense. Like, he wanted to go back into war, and he wanted to just, you know, like, I don't know, like, fuck shit up or just be a part of it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I want to talk about the stops he makes on the way, because he makes a lot of stops, and what I like about it is that every time he goes into a different place, like, you know, you start off with, at the beginning, right, you know, with the meeting and the assignment,
mm-hmm.
and then you go off into the surfer colonel guy.
Oh, yes.
Or captain, whatever he is. I don't know all the ranks. And the only reason they took over that beach was, it wasn't
that's,
because...
That's how he got him. That's how he got him to do it.
Yeah. No, he knew, right. Okay. But let's say the only reason he even took over that beach and endangered and killed several soldiers along the way, helicopters and everything went down, was to because they had a better surfing
conditions.
Conditions, yes. And he was so excited that they had that famous surfer from California come in.
Yep.
Like, I mean, that's a level of derangement that's different from Martin Short's character, but it's still there. And like right. a different level of ego, like power hungry, like that's his world right there. That land, all the soldiers he commands, he owns them without reproach. Like he is in power. He doesn't have a general, even though he does. He doesn't have a president, even though he does. He doesn't have a mandate in that country, even though he does, other than to whatever he wants. In this case, surfing, and it's super weird. Like the napalming, all those deaths, you know. And it's every time he does this, Martin Sheen, he does this every time. It's like a different world he's walking in, even though it's the same country, same people from the same lands. It's all different worlds, you know. When he goes into that one spectacle with the women dancing and shit, like
he's a lieutenant colonel. Hmm. Robert Duvall's character, you're talking about?
Yeah.
I love what Martin Sheen says about him in the. He's like, he's one of those guys where you knew he wouldn't get touched. Like, he'd leave this place unharmed. You know, he's like one of those, like, he just had this, like, aura of him or something. He was never going to get hit from this place. He was never going to get injured. He was never, nothing bad was going to happen to him physically. Yeah. You know, he's just like, I'm living life. I'm enjoying what I got to do. I have power. I'm going to take advantage of this power that I have to make sure I get my enjoyment, but I'm still going to do my job.
Yeah, and I don't even know if he's right with that assessment. I mean, that's what he thinks, but like, I mean, he's insane when in the middle of the taking over the beach and it's all gunfire and mortar shells everywhere. He's like, you know, starts taking off his shirt. He's like, no, I'll go out there. Don't worry about it. I'll go out there. And we may see soldiers go surf before him. Like, I'll go out there and shoulder everyone. It's safe. This beach is perfectly safe as bullets are whizzing by his head. He's saying all this.
Yeah, I mean, like, the introduction you get to him is, it's kind of cool because he's throwing death cards on these bodies, yes. Right?
Yeah.
And as he's throwing the death cards, like, he's about to go have, like, a very important conversation with somebody, right? And then he's in the middle of it. He goes, wait, who's here? Oh, yeah, let me go talk to the surfer guy instead. Fuck that. And you're like, wait, what? Like,
no, he was about to give a dying
Vietnam. Oh, that's right. He'll dying the girl. Yeah.
The guy. But I don't know. He was about to give him water from his canteen saying, could you prove that this guy's not below enough to drink from water from my own canteen, much less ours or yours.
Right.
And right in the middle of that, he doesn't even give it. The guy's begging for the water as he leaves to go talk to the surfer guy.
Yeah, he spills it all over. Yeah.
He spilled it all over. The fuck? You know? This is a constant hypocrisy, constant insanity. It's just chaos. Every time someone describes Vietnam that way, it's like this movie is kind of showing you that along the way. And you're seeing it with the soldiers on the... I mean, I could have seen that coming. I mean, the MPs did not have it handled when those women were dancing on that stage. You know, there were what? There were playmates, right? I think.
Yeah, Playboy playmates.
Yeah, playmates. I mean, it was... it cut short. Yeah, I mean, they would have enjoyed it more if had they just fucking stayed in their seats. But what the fuck? Like, who can control them? A bunch of, like, kids out there.
You got a bunch of 17-year-old kids, 18-year-old kids, you know?
Yeah. And then you have the whole thing with the boat, and you have the thing with the boat when they start shooting kids, when they're just throwing, like, sticks, not arrows at them. There's a lot of stuff like that everywhere. And, you know, and when you get to Colonel Kurtz, it's not even a different world. It's a different universe. The way everyone acts and reacts to you, and it's weird. It's just weird. It kind of reminds me of a little bit of the Lost City of Z, you know, when they go into certain tribes in that movie. And the severity of the customs of those people in those tribes, and some of them are dangerous for the explorers, and some of them are not. That whole Colonel Kurtz compound or cult or whatever kind of felt that way. I don't know if you guys felt something similar, but I did. Anyway, you guys continue. Sorry, I've been talking.
Yeah. All right. So, any other talking points?
Well, that's the beginning.
So we got to the beginning. We got to the whole thing with the Lieutenant Kilgore.
Yeah. We got to
the, yeah. Uh-huh. So then after that, we had the...
he gets to the... That's the next thing is the playmates, isn't it?
Kind of sort of something else there.
I don't remember. I mean, if there is, maybe it was one of the Redux scenes. Because I don't know. I forget Redux.
The next big thing is... I saw it. I saw the same version you did this time.
Oh, okay.
Well, then after that, you had the whole Playmates thing. And then I guess when they got to that bridge or whatever it is, and then like they're just fighting the fucking... the Viet Cong, and it's just like no one knows who's in charge. They're like, aren't you in charge?
Oh yeah,
that was crazy.
That's when they get to that right before they get to Cambodia.
Yep. And at that point, I think he already told the guys like, "Hey, that he's going into Cambodia for like a classified mission, and that's why he's got to go there."
Yeah. That one crazy guy, Roach. I think his name was Roach. Roach. I've been looking at IMDb right now. He has a grenade launcher. And he's just like, yeah, I hear him. No, I don't need the light. Like, because they were shooting at him. They kept hearing that, you know, the one guy left. Yeah. And he just shoots him through sound without even looking where he is. And he lands the shot because he stops talking.
That's crazy.
And then he's like, that's it. Walks away. Like, oh, the guy asked him, do you know who's in charge? He goes, yeah, I do. And he just walks away. You're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then at that point, they also receive mail. And he gets a thing like another classified mail that's like, oh, hey, just so you know, a couple months ago we sent another guy with the same exact mission as you.
Yeah.
But he got turned and he's like a believer in Kurtz.
Do you think if that letter doesn't get to him, does he get turned?
I don't know.
That's an interesting point. I had a whole thing on Colonel Kurtz.
It could have been, because I think, I don't know, because he waited for a while at the end, you know, before he actually took action against him.
Well, I don't know. That's just interesting overall, because once he gets to them, obviously along the way we start losing people on the boat, but when he eventually talks to Colonel Kurtz, I kind of feel like he was going to be with him anyway. Mm-hmm.
Right, because he sounds like on the same level of chaos as he is, right?
Yeah, if not like to the next level, that he's like a one step ahead, like in a chess move, you know? Weird.
Yeah, I mean, I have
also.
Yeah, go ahead.
Before that, there was that scene where they're on the water, and there's that other boat that comes by, and they start searching it.
Oh yeah,
and becomes a total shit show.
Yeah.
Because he's like, what's in the pod? And he goes in, like, the lady tries to, like, run for it, and they just fucking kill everyone.
Yeah.
And then she's still alive, and he just offs her, and yeah. He's like, nope, we don't have time for this. And that was crazy, because he's like, when he was, like, writing in his diary, he's like, these guys will never look at me the same way again.
Yeah. I mean, he predicted, like, this guy was too high strung, and this guy was too, yeah, you know.
The chef guy was too high strung.
Yeah.
Lance, which is the surfer guy, he was just on acid all the time.
Yeah, he was a fucking idiot.
The chief Phillips, which is Albert Hall's character, the what's it called, the skipper or whatever, the boat, the captain of the boat, technically.
Yeah,
he was, hey man, I'm just doing my job, you know. But right. Also a little bit like still too much of a moral compass going on in comparison to what the Martin Sheen's character
compared to the world he was living, honestly.
Right. Yeah. And then you had a Clean, which was Lawrence Fishburne's character, who was just, hey man, you tell me what to do. But he was also a little bit high strung. That's why he's the one who messes up. And she,
oh, he's a 17-year-old kid.
No, I get that 100%, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, how do you handle that?
Yeah. I don't even begin to imagine.
I can't even imagine myself in that situation, in any of those situations.
Especially not at 17.
Yeah, especially right, exactly. Yeah.
It's funny how, like, throughout this whole journey, you kind of, like, get everyone's kind of, like, story in a way.
Oh, yeah,
for like, sure. You got the whole thing with Chef. Like, they just go out into the thing. He's like, I want to get some fucking mangoes. And they get the goddamn tiger incident.
That's right.
Yeah, and he's just, yeah. It's crazy, you know.
I think it's a good reminder of how they don't belong there. It's like, the world, the country is kicking them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of feels that way. They're invaders. They feel like invaders. You know, that's another a big element that the movie has along the way. It's just these Americans should not be there.
Mm-hmm.
That even the tigers are attacking them. Should we get to the Kurtz compound or whatever it is?
Yeah, because pretty much after that, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good lasting chunk of the movie. It's like 40 minutes of it.
Yeah, it's crazy, like, when they get there, because, like, along the way, right before they get there, they lose Chief.
Right,
because
speared.
Yes.
Yeah. And then fucking, like, choked to death, because to end his suffering.
Yeah. Well, what was it? What did you think of that scene, actually? Because that scene, you have Martin Sheen, who's trying to calm everybody down, right? And, like, hey, stop shooting, like, relax, like, it's just sticks being thrown at us, right? You have what's his name? You have Lance, the, you know, what's it called, the surfer, who's putting the broken arrow all over his head, like he just got stabbed with an arrow through his head. What's it called? He's like wiring it through, like making it a joke out of it. And then everybody else is just kind of like, I don't know who I'm shooting at. I'm just shooting, blah 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 blah. And then right before that, right after that, all that happens, you know, he gets speared. Like they didn't, like, should they have just left it alone? Was Martin Sheen's character right in this move, in this part?
You know. I mean, I don't know. Well, had Lance not activated that, like, smoke grenade,
right,
it probably wouldn't have happened. That triggered a reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably, he was probably right. But they were, like, being loud and crass, as Americans are, and then they got noticed, and they were first maybe being played with, but their reaction led to, yeah, the spear. or it was always going to happen. Who can say? But it probably would have served better if they hadn't done anything.
You know? Right.
All right. Especially that reaction. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you needed, I mean, also the movie needed them to be whittled down a bit. So when they get to the Kurtz compound, it's you get to focus a lot more on what's going on there than a bunch of characters. So
all that's left when you get to Kurtz is what, Lance and Chef?
Yeah, I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just two of them, and obviously Martin Sheen. Man, that's your question earlier, Ralph, as to had he not gotten that report or whatever, would he have joined Kurtz? I don't think so. I think my answer is no on everything, because I think Kurtz has a certain way, right? A certain way of like, beating a man down, maybe, or rewriting his DNA, right? Just as a shorthand, reprogramming a man into, you know, confronting the chaos, the darkness, the horror, as he says, and joining him. That goes against Martin Sheen's character. I don't think he responds well to people forcing their doctrines on him. He would never have stood to heads being thrown on his lap, being incarcerated the way he was, being tied up the way he was, and being monologued to. Like, I don't think he responded well to, like, being under the authority of one individual versus an entity like the U.S. Army. I think as a man, as a person, that's the way I saw him. So I think he would have always tried or succeeded in killing Kurtz, no matter what, even if he got an report later or not. You know? This is how I think. But what do you guys think?
Interesting. I don't know. I felt like it could have gone either way, in my perspective. It was like, because that one scene when he's like, yeah, I'm not a prisoner. There's no one holding me back. I'm just here. There's no one looking at me in the doorway. There's no one to keep me here from leaving or from killing him. But yet, and he's not chained at that point, right? But at the same time, he's being held. Like, he knows he's being held. And the guy knows, the Colonel, Kurtz, knows that he's not going to kill him at that point. It's like a really weird, like, he doesn't know, like, if it's the right thing to kill him. You know what I'm saying? Like, because they're no, almost...
No, that's a different question, yeah.
That's how, like, the Kurtz would have got him to, like, eventually either see it his way or whatever, because they're cut from the same cloth almost. You know, I would say Marlon Brando's character, Colonel Kurtz, is way smarter, but overall their feelings and things about Vietnam itself is probably very similar, and how the fact that he could probably run it way better, and he obviously has the proof from all the paperwork he read on him that he did run, you know, missions and shit way more successfully than the Army did themselves. Army intelligence. He's like, yeah, well, why wouldn't I join this? I felt like it could have gone another way. And I felt like he gets an out by Kurtz telling him to give him the out, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. I can see how, right, if he hadn't said that, maybe he wouldn't have been so, like, killjoy, maybe, in the way he did it. Because he did it aggressively.
I do agree with you. Yeah, he did it. But I do agree with you. Like, if he doesn't, I think if it would have been, because I don't know, I forget now if it's that's before or after the fact that Chef's head rolls on his lap. I can't think of if that was before or after. But, I think that's also a very impactful part. By killing Chef, he's like, what the fuck, you know? Like, that probably, like, kind of snaps him back more to reality as well.
If you want to call it that, right?
If you want, yeah, because that's a right. trippy end part of the movie. It's all to help.
Yeah, I think that very first meeting when they're both not worried that they're going to kill each other, I think they're both curious about each other. They both want to see what kind of man they are. Like, I think the whole time, and even when he took the mission, he was just curious to see what kind of man can do this. To the point where they have to hire an assassin to go after him. You know, what kind of man does it take to be a god to a group of people? Like, you know, like that kind of thing. I think he was super curious. And upon meeting him, he probably was very much, you know, confronted whether or not to kill him. I think that question was always there. I don't think he ever knew he was going to kill him. He was definitely going to meet him. He wanted to meet him so bad. But I don't think he ever knew he was going to go through with it because that was his mission. But I think the final nail on it, the the thing that could let him to convince to kill him is what you said earlier, Ralph, about Kurtz giving him, like, the go-ahead, you know, in a way, at the end. And the way it cuts between that and the cow.
Water buffalo.
Water buffalo. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Water buffalo execution, you know, ritualistic execution in a way, for consumption. It's it just like describes it's just showing you the insanity of it, like the way it all, like the gruesomeness of the such actions, you know, kind of, I don't know, it's a weird thing. The whole scene was weird. And yeah, but I don't know, but you're right. I think up until the end, up until he did it, he wasn't sure he was going to go through with it. But I never thought, though, he was going to join him that way either.
Do you think he was going to continue his, like, he was going to actually go through and, like, because Kurtz wanted for his son to know who he was. And so he took all his stuff. You think he's actually going to go to his family and be like, this is what your father wrote, this is what he believed in, and things like that? You think he's going to kind of honor his wish?
Maybe. Maybe. I do feel like they both respect each other in some weird level. And I can see that. But I don't know. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I don't know, because the movie ends weird. Because he asks also in his, like, biography or whatever the hell he wrote. he says, blow them all up, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm taking as a note, as in, like, to blow everybody up there.
Right. He doesn't give that command, though.
He never gives it, right. He's getting called on the radio. He just turns off the radio.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, super weird. It's like a weird, like, middle ground. It's like he succeeded in his mission, but not really. He didn't really, like, there are all these people there drinking some Kool-Aid of some kind, still. I don't know, it's very strange. I do feel like he took the manuscript or whatever that was as I feel like overall, it feels like a respect thing. And maybe he is going to give it to his son or keep it for himself, but as long as it gets read, I think it's the important part. But to blow them all away, yeah, that's fucked up. Well, dark.
Yeah.
That's dark. I don't know what else to say about that. But you know how the movie ends, and it ends with you know, him going in the boat, and you hear the horror, or you hear it twice.
Yeah.
And almost just, it feels like that's going to be his chant, his mantra. He's going to hear it all the time. He's going to be dreaming him saying the horror, like, for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
No one wins in this, and no one wins in this movie.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's a shit show through and through. So,
yeah, it's almost like, you know, you might wish to die because of what you're going to be dealing with forever, for the rest of your life. You're going to be dealing with the horror of it all the time. And that's really why those words are the last words you hear in the movie about Vietnam, because it's the horror of it all. You know, it's fucked up. It's fucked up on many levels, but especially for Martin Sheen's character, who's he's worse. I don't think he's worse than when he came in. And I don't see how that's possible, because he was pretty bad when the movie started. You know. But what do you think, Luke, about any of this?
Yeah, I got no. I don't have much more to add to this.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's not. There's no clear answer, I guess.
Nah. War sucks.
Dude, war is, yeah, war is sucky. Very sucky. I mean, that's, what else can you say? What else can we say? What else? I don't know. It makes me look at those movies that glorify war, like, repulsed by them more when I see this kind of movie. You know, kind of makes me kind of see them as schlocky versions of war movies.
What movie would you think glorifies war?
The one that Mel Gibson was nominated for. What's the name of that movie?
The Patriot?
No, Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw.
Yeah, that movie I really didn't like. I really hated that movie. For many reasons, but
I thought it was more like recognizing the person, not the war.
Nah, I fucking recognize the war. And it wasn't about the war itself. It's about the valor in war. It's about a lot of. I felt like that movie was just horrible to watch. I hated it. I hated that movie so much. It glorified the wrong things, in my opinion. but there's a few of them like that. And I don't know about The Patriot. Maybe that one, but that one feels like more like him saving his family kind of thing. But
that's like a whole America, fuck yeah.
Yeah, right. Which is, in a way, the same thing. You're right. It's like almost propaganda, right?
And then again, I have not seen The Patriot since like it came out on VHS.
Often I saw that movie a shit ton of times, but it's been a long time for me. Yeah.
I just remember the one thing with the guy getting his fucking leg blown off by the cannon.
Yes. Yeah, that's coming to mind. For me, it's when he takes out that convoy by himself with the rifles, you know, behind trees. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're fucking going off track here.
Yeah, we're digressing.
Anyway, Apocalypse Now, though. Hell of a movie. Everyone should
Hell of a watch.
Hell of a watch. Seems like we all recommend it, so check it out.
It's definitely a good movie. I don't think we've said that, but it's definitely a good movie.
Right. Yeah, we all enjoy it, even though it's fucked up. All right, so I think that's it for our show, and you have been listening to another movie podcast. Remember, you can always send feedback at podmoviecast@gmail.com. If you want to find us separately, together, or whatever, on social media, we are on Twitter. I am an Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke?
I'm at Slothmaster Luke.
Ralph?
I am at Don Rafael, underscore between the Rafael.
Nice. And we come out bi-weekly, so next time, Raf, what are the movies for next time?
We're doing HBO, and then we have a bio-comedy-crime movie called Bad Education. Starring Hugh Jackman, Ray Romano, Walker White. Seems interesting. And then we have a documentary, because, you know, this is to
HBO.
HBO, yeah. It's called Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind.
I almost saw that the other day, so now I get to see it.
There you go. Awesome. So yeah, it's exploring Natalie Wood's life through the perspective of her daughter and other loved ones.
Yeah, you guys know about the Natalie Wood thing?
I know who Natalie Wood is, yeah. I don't know it. I don't know much, but I know who she is.
No, I mean recently.
No, I don't know anything about that, no.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll find out. If it's not a documentary, I'll enlighten you guys later. But something fucked up happened last year.
Okay. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. Well, something fucked up came out last year. She's been gone for a while.
Yeah, she is.
Okay. So, and then the Sight and Sound marathon pick?
The Sight and Sound movie, right, correct, is City Lights. 1931.
Ooh.
I am officially picking, I think, the oldest movie as of right now on the marathon.
Yes.
It's number 50 on the Sight and Sound, tied with La Jete and Ugeste Monogatari.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Because <Thanks. we're> tight. Okay. Okay, guys. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Until then, I am Oscar.
And Luke.
Yes, they are.
In case I don't see you. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.